Hey guys, we're back for another exciting, exhilarating, unbelievably awesome, maybe, episode of True Crime on Easy Street. Kelly is in the big chair today. My name is Scott Wright. I am a mediocre journalist.
Kelly Turner, not a doctor.
Katie Givens, not a lawyer.
All right, guys, so I have no idea what we're going to talk about today. You know how we talk about somebody's the dummy when we walk in here. Last week it was Katie because she wasn't very astute on Jack the Ripper. She is now, so when you see her on the street, ask her. She can tell you anything you want to know.
Yeah, you know, ask me about that. Ask me about Fourth Wing, you know, whatever.
We had a long conversation about some book that you guys are reading.
Yeah.
Some series of books.
Yes. Yeah.
And I am just sitting here with my eyes glazed over because I have no idea what you're talking about. I've been reading about Jack the Ripper for the last month, and you guys are having a good time.
No, well, I mean, we'll say good time. I have to sprinkle in my reading time because when I get obsessed with something, I get obsessed. I must have some form of OCD or something because I get...
That tracks.
Yeah. Yeah. I get like in something and then I talk about it like it's real and... Shane, you know, tells me that I live in my own little world, and I say I like it here.
I do too. I dig a fantasy world.
Yeah.
So everybody is the mayor of their own little world.
That's true. That's true. Katie's also in law school, so in between reading everything you have to read for that, you're finding time to read for leisure, which is wonderful.
Don't tell my professors, because they would probably say I need to spend that time studying if I have the time to be this obsessed with
books.
That
sounds like something a professor would say. I've got a shout out.
Okay.
A lady named Carrie Behrens, I think we might have mentioned her on the show before, but she reached out recently on Facebook just this past week and told us about another case that I told her, thank you very much. We will put it on the list. And I did. So we will get to that one down the road at some point. Thank you, Carrie.
Yeah.
For
thank
listening
you.
To the show.
Yeah. And for the suggestion. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that.
That's all I have.
How's everybody's October going so far?
October is my favorite.
You ready for spooky season?
I am. It is my favorite month of the year.
Yeah,
it's your birthday.
It's your birthday month.
But
and
besides
that's
that,
coming up in just a few days.
Maybe.
If this podcast lands when I think it's gonna, I'm not sure.
I think that's right.
Yeah, and the big, huge, gigantic, enormous Halloween party at the Turner residence.
Yeah.
If you haven't received your invite in the mail, consider this your invitation.
No, don't.
And
she makes a lot of food, but it's not that much food.
What you are all invited to is the big Halloween party at Easy Street.
There you
that's
go.
The one.
See, I knew
that's
what I was doing.
The one.
Which will be the Saturday before Halloween.
Okay.
Costume contest. We'll have the different
cash
categories.
Prizes.
Yes.
I love a good costume contest.
What you are good at costumes. Remember
you are
the year
good
that
at
you
costume.
Did the Statue of Liberty and you were like, you did the face paint and you had a spring a sparkler. Didn't you have a sparkler?
It was a torch. It wasn't lit.
But didn't it light up?
No.
It just kind of, I remember that.
The way it was painted, it kind of looked like it did. And
then that was a missed opportunity.
Well, then one year, I participated in the Easy Street costume contest as the Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah. You had
that
the hair and everything.
Year. I did have the hair. Oh. And what was so funny is I participated in two different costume contests that night. Mm-hmm. And so driving from one to the other, I had to drive with my sunroof open.
Oh, dear.
And the hair stuck out the top.
Good thing you didn't have far to go.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
Marge Simpson, but Bride of Frankenstein driving.
Yikes. Did you win either of the contests?
She won both, I think.
Both of them.
I thought you were getting to that.
Man, it was fun.
Cool.
As she should have.
Yeah. You went all out. You certainly deserved it.
So, Scott, what's your costume this year?
Mediocre journalist.
Oh, still. No. Yep. We talked about that last week.
Sticking with it. Yeah, I'm just going to walk around the way I normally dress, but with a notepad in my hand.
Okay. Katie, you got any ideas?
I have some ideas. I was pretty certain on something, and now I'm kind of backtracking, so we shall see.
Yeah. TBD for me.
All right. Oh, really? You don't have anything in mind yet?
Not yet. All right. I have a few things, but I don't know.
And like right after Halloween every year, I get so set on something for the next year.
Yep.
And then by the time it rolls around, I'm like, play around a little bit.
That's the way it goes.
Well, you guys spend a lot of time.
I like a costume.
It's fun.
And so if I'm going to do a costume, I'm not going to. I can't go all out as Kelly just because I'm not that creative or talented. But I still like to.
That's a fair assessment. That's right.
It's terrible.
Very few people.
You're more
are.
Talented than she is. Okay. At least when it comes to Halloween costumes.
Yeah.
Only in that.
Yeah. I could only aspire.
I have a lot of fun with it. It's a good time. At my other job, in my other life, we tend to have a lot of folks dress up for Halloween. It looks really cool. We've had, you know, folks dress up like the lady from The Nun. Well, that was terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah,
we've had
I thought you meant Sally Field, the flying nun, for a second.
No, I'm talking about the spooky, scary The Nun. That was creepy. Then we had a whole department 1 year dress up and do the wolf, Little Red Riding Hood, the wolf. And it was great. So we have some good costumes there, too.
Is Kevin coming as the grumpy oaf like he usually does? I mean, the same as
now,
always.
KT's can be good at a costume, too.
He is a good costume. 1 year he was...
I just dropped that in to see if he's listening to the show still, because he'll let me know if he hears
that. Oh, he will. Yeah, he'll let you. Okay. 1 year he was the guy from the Breakfast Club, the long hair and the gloves and the... What was his name?
Judd Nelson.
Yeah, from the Breakfast Club. He was there.
Character. I mean, not the character's name, but that's the actor's name.
Yeah, he was that one
and
year.
Well, he certainly has the attitude to match.
My favorite one that I've seen KT do was at the same party that you dressed as the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
Because he had grown his facial hair out and cut it was he a professor?
Yeah, yeah. He had these chops down the side of his face.
Okay. I mean, I was like, that is commitment.
He had the coat and it was
like
so funny.
Like the bowler hat and the whole thing.
And he nailed. I could still...
He loves a good costume every now and then.
Yeah. Glad to hear he likes something.
You're not gonna drag him down that much, Scott. We're here to take up for KT today.
Exactly. Thank you. All right. So, are you guys ready for the story?
Is it something that is festive and?
Well, I mean, I don't know about.
Well, not festive, but is it month appropriate?
It is month appropriate. Okay. You've seen the title of our episode, so you know that possibly we're dealing with vampires. When you have a name like Count Malabar as your episode title.
It's kind of a giveaway.
Yeah. So we are going to talk about someone who, he is a self-proclaimed vampire. I'm not just calling him a vampire. By his own proclamation.
Okay.
He's a vampire. So let's start. I'm going to get the glasses on, everything ready.
And you guys are going to hear her take her glasses on and off about 5 times.
Maybe.
And that's the little clunk.
I know. I'm going to try not to do that because I know that's annoying. So here we are. We are going to be in Malabar, Florida this week. The events take place in 1985. So here we go. November 22nd, 1985 in Malabar, Florida. Thomas Harper is driving along Hall Road and he sees a woman with handcuffs on her hands and feet crawling along the side of the road. She's naked and he stops and he helps her up, gets her into his car, gets her a coat. She's crying and she's saying, "Don't make me go back to that house." And he asks her which house. She points to one not far from where they stood, and she's very weak and seems to be slowly losing consciousness. And she says, before she finally blacks out, "Don't forget that house. I just escaped from there."
Wow.
So the man takes her to his house and calls the police and an ambulance. Once they get her to the hospital, the doctors tell her she was very, very close to death because she had 40% loss of her blood in her body.
Oh, wow.
They were able to save her. And this 19-year-old woman had a terrifying story for the authorities. The day before, on November 21st, 1985, our heroine of our story, because she is our hero, Laura Murphy, she came to Malabar, Florida on a trip from California and was staying with friends. So on this day, on the 21st, she's walking along the road. It's about 1 p.m., broad daylight, when a man pulls over and asks her where she's going. The man looked like he was in his 30s and offered her a ride to her destination. So she got in the car. Now, in the 80s are going to be part of our story here. A lot of the things that happened make sense in the 80s because hitchhiking was still a thing. Because
You would not do this now.
No, do not hitchhike today. Yeah. Do not do it. This is one of the reasons that you should not.
Was it Edmund Kemper that took credit for
Edmund Kemper, Ted Bundy, I think picked up. Yeah. Yes.
For getting people to stop hitchhiking.
Exactly. So she gets into the car. Now, while they're driving, she tells the man, you know, where she's from, why she's in town, casual conversation, right? He said that her destination was actually near where he worked and he could drop her off. But first, he had to stop by his house for a notebook that he needed for work, which made sense to her. This is why he's out driving. I'm on my lunch break.
Yeah.
I'm going to grab this notebook, going back to my work. Where you're going is nearby. I'll drop you off. Let me go in and grab this notebook. When he turns into the driveway, he says, "Would you like to come in?" She declines. That's wise. Okay.
Yeah.
He presses further, asking if she wanted to come in for a drink. She declined again. So he gets out of the car. He walks around to her side, opens the door. He asks her one last time, "You sure you don't want
to
come in?"
Starting to get a little creepy if I'm her.
Getting into her personal space. She says no. At this point, he reaches in and puts a rope around her neck. Again, broad daylight in this neighborhood in Florida. He drags her, using this rope around her neck, from the car, across the yard, and into the home. She tried to fight him, but she was smaller than he was at the time. So this didn't really work. So as she's being dragged, the rope is pulling on her neck. You can imagine she ends up passing out as she's being pulled into the house. When she wakes up, she is tied to a kitchen countertop. She is naked, and so was he.
Yeah.
She sees a video camera set up and pointed on her. At this point in time, he rapes her. She had no idea how long she's been in this home at this point. She's losing time. She's in and out of consciousness this whole time that all of this is happening. She woke up again to him inserting needles into her arm. And of course, she's screaming, "What are you doing?" And he says, "I'm taking out your blood. I'm a vampire." That calm. Yeah. So she saw her blood going into a beaker on the counter, and he was pouring it into a jar and drinking it. And again, Laura is in and out of consciousness. When she wakes up again, now she's in a different room. Her wrists and ankles are handcuffed. She's still naked. They're in a waterbed, and he rapes her again. She has no idea how many times this has happened. She doesn't know how many times she's been raped. She doesn't know how long she's been there. She's in and out, has no idea how much of her blood he has consumed. So then he moves her to a bathroom. Throws her in the bathroom, closes the door. She hears it lock, and she's doing her best to remain calm and listen. She has the sense at this time to try and listen, to figure out, where is she? Does she hear any other sounds? Can she hear any other people? And more importantly, she believes she heard him leave.
Okay.
So as she's trying to stay conscious, she escapes out of a bathroom window when she was sure that he was gone. So she goes up and out the bathroom window. She's still handcuffed. She falls really hard on the ground on her shoulder, you know, and can't get up and run because of these handcuffs. So she's crawling. She did not make it very far until our driver finds her and helps her. And actually, the driver lives on this same street.
The guy who found her and picked her up.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
And he picks her up about noon on November the 22nd. So the authorities say she was probably in that house about 22 hours with our self-proclaimed vampire. The authorities determine that this house is owned by John Crutchley, a 39-year-old man. He lived there with his wife and 4-year-old son at 2180 Hall Road. John was an engineer in the Government Systems Division of Harris Corporation. This corporation is a contractor of the Navy and is involved with NASA research and launch facilities. And they quickly learned that Crutchley has top secret security clearance access to lots of classified information. So as far as you can tell, the career with the Harris Corporation began in 1983, and that's about how long he had been in Malabar, Florida. He's not originally from there.
So we have let a self-proclaimed vampire just skirt through all these interviews.
Yeah, this high-level security clearance
you have
process.
To do to get a security clearance like this.
You know, vampires are good at hiding who they are. I mean, this is common vampire lore information, guys. Come on.
Yeah, let me call my brother and tell him to keep an eye out.
So the police go to the home and they talk with Crutchley. And he says, yes, I picked her up. She was hitchhiking. We went to the house and he called her a, quote, second generation Charles Manson follower. He went on to say that she, quote, consented to kinky sex with him. He's like, this is what I do. The police are going to get a search warrant. They're going to get a search warrant because Crutchley is saying, look, she agreed to all this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's her word against mine.
I have done this before. This is one of my things. He's just freely saying this to them.
I do this.
Yeah. These women consent to this with me. It's a kink that I have. So they get a search warrant and they enter the home. And Crutchley says that his wife and son, they are in Maryland visiting family for Thanksgiving. Because this is late November. It's the Thanksgiving holiday season. He told police, of course, I've done this before, picking up women for kinky sex. He tells them that he's into bondage, pain, and blood. And the taking of the blood was done on him as well as the consenting women. So he's blowing it off like, I just have this weird kinky sex. It's okay. Mm-hmm. We're adults. We consent to this. No big deal.
Yeah.
Now, police are going to find several items in his house to confirm Laura's story. They're going to find things like dog collars, but he doesn't have a dog, rope, ribbons, leather restraints, dozens of women's necklaces, chains, surgical equipment, needles, tubing, Laura's ID, and the jar he used to drink Laura's blood. They are also going to find marijuana and other drug paraphernalia. They discover a Nissan Stanza with everything that identifies the vehicle stripped off, black tape over the logo. Are we putting this together, guys? Yeah. Like, what do we think about John Crutchley?
That's his murder car.
Yeah, because you can't identify. You can't even find this car.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist. You can't see the serial number. You can't even see what make or model it is. Do we think, guys, at this point that... John, our vampire, has done this before.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah. This is some incriminating evidence, mm-hmm. I would think. And of course, a lot of these items are in Laura's story. She's telling them. They find the video equipment or a camera. They don't find anything of substance, but...
that would be incriminating.
Sure. Yeah. But they see a camera and he's like, oh, it's all part of it. Mm-hmm. This is what we do. He's trying to blow it off. Now, once they discover this Nissan and they start putting all this other stuff together that they have found, Crutchley's going to now start to cry because I think it hits him. He's about to be arrested. So now he's doing kind of a different kind of bargaining. He's crying and you know, apologetic. They're going to arrest him, of course, on 11 charges. Some of those include robbery, possession of a controlled substance, kidnapping, aggravated battery, and sexual battery. Now, remember, this is the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is going to jail on a rape charge or a sexual battery charge wasn't like it is today.
Right.
This is 1985.
Different time.
Yeah. All right. So, let's get a little bit of a background on our self-proclaimed vampire right after a word from our sponsor.
Kelly and Katie, let me tell you guys a quick story. Recently, while I was dining at Easy Street, I met a man from Georgia who told me that he and his wife were visiting the Weiss Lake area, planning to relocate here permanently when he retires soon. I told him the first thing that came to my mind, call Greg Oliver at Go Realty. The number is 256-504-3847. Greg is the owner and the broker at Go Realty right here in Cherokee County. If you're thinking of moving here or anywhere in Northeast Alabama or Northwest Georgia, if you're looking for property anywhere in the area, call Greg. He has a full list of waterfront, residential, commercial, farm, and investment properties, and he's ready to help you find exactly what you're looking for. He's got 25 years of experience in the real estate market. Go again and look at that complete list that he currently has for offer. That's Greg Oliver, Weisslake.com. So visit the website or call Greg Oliver at...
What's that number again?
Thanks, guys. 256-504-3847.
Hey, guys, I want to tell you about one of our newest sponsors, and that is Cherokee Family Healthcare. Cherokee Family Healthcare is located right here on Main Street in Center Alabama.
Connie Geimer, who is a nurse practitioner there, is an acute emergency and family specialist, along with Piper Pierce, who's a family and psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner. They offer many services at Cherokee Family Healthcare, such as...
They have primary care, mental health, urgent care, you can get DOT physicals. They handle weight loss, IV hydration. We all need that from time to time. You can get a same-day appointment, and walk-ins are welcome.
Yeah, so give them a call
at 256-266-1021. And as we move into our holiday season, the Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce wants to remind everyone to shop local.
Cherokee County has some lovely shops that you can patron throughout the holiday season, get any kind of gifts that you need. Scott, what kind of gifts do you need?
I don't really need anything, but there are plenty of things that I want, and you can get a lot of those things right here in Cherokee County. You can get a great meal at one of the many restaurants that is a member of the Chamber of Commerce. It's as simple as filling up your gas station, your gas tank at a local station before you go out of town to do some shopping, if you have to leave town, but we hope you don't. Stay right here in Cherokee County.
Oh, yeah. And my gift that I want you to get me, Scott, you can definitely buy local. So I'll let you know about that later.
Well, you're going to ruin the surprise.
So we want to challenge all of you to make sure to do as much shopping as you can this holiday season right here in Cherokee County.
And if you need more information, visit cherokee-chamber.org.
Guys, we want to let you know that don't forget that Easy Street is now open for lunch 5 days a week, Tuesday through Saturday, open at 11.
Great lunch menu.
Mm, let's do lunch.
Brand new. We've shared it on our Facebook page, and I know that Shane has also shared it on the Easy Street Facebook page, so it's easy to find the menu, and it's terrific. Everything on it.
Yes. What's your favorite thing, Scott?
I like the hamburger steak with the mashed potatoes. The mashed potatoes are better than I can make, and I make pretty darn good mashed potatoes.
No, they are.
They're terrific.
Katie, what's your favorite? Yeah.
I like, well, you can get a flatbread pizza. I also like just the chicken fingers.
Yeah, chicken fingers are great. Best chicken fingers in town. How about you, Kelly?
I like the rice bowl with the chicken and the vegetables.
It's all
good. Yum yum sauce.
Ooh.
So delicious. You're not going to go wrong. Salad bar's always fresh. Have lunch at Easy Street. You might see us there one day.
Yeah, you never know. 11 to 2 every day is when the menu prices on the lunch menu are.
That sounds right.
That's right. Something like that. Everything that comes out of that swinging door is delicious at Easy Street, we promise.
Yes, thank you to Easy Street for being our primary sponsor, our main sponsor.
Yeah. Thanks, Shane. Go eat lunch.
Yes.
Yes.
Come see us.
Okay, so you left us on a cliffhanger, Kelly.
Sure.
So get us out of here.
How does one become a vampire?
I was going to ask.
I mean,
that.
We know the lore, right?
Yeah.
Don't you have to be turned into a vampire?
Let's just see if that happened to John. Let's get some background and see what he's doing here. What happened to him? So John Brennan Crutchley is one of four children born to an affluent family in Clarksburg, West Virginia. According to John's mother, he had a very normal upbringing, but John is going to claim that he experienced lots of abuse growing up. So you have his word against his mother's.
Yeah.
Okay? Kind of similar to his word against Laura's, you know. I think we've established he's really good at lying, but we've done this so many times that... there's usually something in the childhood that happens. I mean, how many times have we talked about someone this level of deviance?
Abused as a child.
And that's a common thing. So I sort of I kind of hold out on, I'm not sure about what happened during his childhood in that home. Now, there are other children who don't really
turn into vampires.
They don't.
Also, yeah. The abuse didn't have to come from the home.
Correct.
So,
correct.
Good point.
So, mother still, could not know.
It right.
Could be, two things could be true.
Right. So, we're, as far as we know, the turning into a vampire did not happen in the childhood. He was married right after high school in 1969 at age 19. He gets his bachelor's degree in physics from Defiance College in Ohio in 1970. He gets a master's of engineering at George Washington University in D.C. Mm-hmm. and gets a really good job in Kokomo, Indiana. Doesn't that sound like a great place?
I didn't know there was a good job to be had in Kokomo, Indiana.
Isn't that a Beach Boy song?
It is, but yeah. I don't think they're singing about that one.
I think it's another one.
Yeah. John gets fired after being accused of stealing $4,000 worth of equipment. So sometime during college, before the job, I'm thinking he was turned into a vampire because this type of equipment that he's stealing, that's one of the things that he's charged with in Florida. It's these beakers and these things that he needs
okay.
in order to drain blood.
His vampire supplies.
His supplies, yeah. Because one must always have a stockpile of blood if one is a vampire.
Yeah.
Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. So, all right. Now, this is going to end his first marriage. He's going to move to Fairfax, Virginia and remarried sometime in the mid 70s. He worked in the DC area at several places. Some places like TRW, ICA, Logicon Process Systems, and then eventually moved to Malabar in 1983. So he's working at all these different places with some high-level security.
High-level computer technology, maybe it sounds
yes.
like.
Yes, and we've established, as you saw the timeline, he's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He's sure. getting his degrees
yeah.
very fast, you know, and then getting these great jobs. But
most
you know,
serial killers are smart people.
They think they're smart.
Well, they're high IQ. Let's say it
this way. This guy has
high IQ.
He does.
Yeah, and because they're high IQ, they have this overinflated sense of self.
Yeah. You can't catch me. I'm smarter than you. Yeah.
For instance, I can just lie my way out of this.
Yes.
Oh, this
we've heard that before.
Everybody was consenting, mm-hmm. and the authorities are like, it didn't seem that Laura was consenting.
She's crawling to the road.
She's handcuffed and crawling to the road and begging someone, don't make me go back in that house. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Laura did not consent to any of this.
I think that's a hot bingo.
Exactly. So Malabar 1983, he and his second wife purchased the home on Hall Road. It has 2.7 acres with it. He owned several motorcycles and a sports car. So this is where we are. Now let's go back to him being in jail. John's in jail. He's been arrested, charged with the things that we talked about. John's lawyer is really good and pleads his case to the judge, saying that John is the breadwinner of the family and he has to work. And he gets a $50,000 bond and gets out.
What?
He pays it on December the 2nd. And again, this is 1985.
So he's in jail for less than 2 weeks and he's back on the streets.
He would have had to pay a bail bondsman $5,000.
Right.
Yeah, and gets out. Because he's not... There's no doubt in my mind that he was going to kill Laura. Mm-hmm. And based on the things that they found in his home, I believe that he has murdered other women.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where that goes.
This same way.
In your story.
So, but technically, he's not been brought in for murder or even attempted murder. I'm not even sure why they didn't hit him with that, but it's right. sexual battery.
Well, like you said, it's a different time. But mm-hmm. you got to think somebody in the police department is putting these pieces together and thinking what you just said.
Yeah.
He's done this before.
They're absolutely saying that.
Yeah.
And they're going to call the FBI in.
Okay, good.
And they're going to say that too. Mm-hmm. So I think
probably in 1985, they would have been more worried about the drug paraphernalia and the marijuana than they were the sexual battery.
Yeah, Nancy Reagan's war on drugs
was
right in the
middle
of that.
Force.
Big time.
Yeah, we're in Florida.
Mm-hmm. So John is going to have a couple of months to get rid of any kind of evidence and anything. Mm. So while he's in jail for that short amount of time, he meets this guy named Jackie Horton, and they become pals. And so when he pays his bond, he pays Jackie's too. And then Jackie moves in with him.
Now he's got a flunky.
Jackie moves in with him. And in the meantime, his wife she's eventually going to leave him.
Okay, that,
and so they're not in the home. The wife and the son are not in the home.
Yeah, you've been arrested for sexual battery. That's enough for me, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, his wife, Karen, let's stick a pin in that for just a moment. Okay. I'm going to get back to Karen. But Jackie Horton moves in with John, and so the two men are living there in the home. Now, Jackie is going to tell authorities that they did have a sexual relationship, and on several occasions, he was in fear of his life during sexual intercourse when John wraps his hands around his throat and tries to choke him. Mm-hmm. He also says that there was a safe in the home that John cleans out completely, fills a garbage bag about halfway full, and goes out the back door on foot. Remember, it's a 2.7-acre mm-hmm. piece of property. Mm-hmm. And he tells Jackie, John says, look, I'm taking this out. It's best if you don't come outside, don't look where I'm going, and don't ask any questions.
And well, that's Jackie, not suspicious or anything.
And Jackie said, okay, and then later told the authorities about everything. Now, they try to find this bag on the property, and they never can find this bag. And I believe that in that safe, it would have connected all those women's necklaces.
Yeah.
And
his trophies were in there.
Yeah, and the video footage mm-hmm. of all of his victims. And that is lost forever. And the FBI, they talk about this. Wrestler is actually who they call in. He's okay. One of the Mindhunter guys.
Yeah.
And he says, no doubt, John Crutchley is a murderer. He's done this before. Mm-hmm. He's going to keep doing this. And he says that a lot of regular cop detectives are not trained on what to look for when they go into these homes. This is not a shot at detectives. It's mm-hmm. just a fact. FBI profilers, when they go into a home, they know what to look for more so than. And so when they first go in with this search warrant and they find all of these things, they find some really good evidence and find Laura's ID there.
Yeah.
They actually find
Laura's.
Well,
that's where the robbery comes in, right?
I think it's the equipment.
Okay, you mentioned that.
But maybe they find her ID in a pair of wet swim trunks where he just sort of stuck it in a pocket and kind of threw it in the laundry room. And so they did do a thorough enough search.
Sounds like it. But if you don't know what you're looking for.
Right. Yeah. So they were able to find that mm-hmm. in the home, but somehow missed the safe and the contents within are forever lost. Mm-hmm. But that's, I'm not trying to say anything bad about them. I'm just saying that's what wrestlers was like, it's hard to know. And in an area like this, these detectives probably never dealt with a murder. And certainly never anything like this. Mm-hmm. You could be a seasoned detective and never deal with a vampire.
Right.
So, anyways, John is fired from his job and is denied.
I will pretend to be surprised if you like.
Right. And is denied access to get his personal belongings. They're like, you know what? You're fired. Okay. And all of those top secret revoked.
Yes.
You're done. So they are able to search his former office on December 20th.
1985. And they find an ID belonging to a woman named Patty Walensky. Patty was last seen going into John's trailer back when he lived in Virginia. And Patty is still missing.
Years before.
Mm-hmm. They also found an ID of his former roommate and his first wife, but both were alive and well at the time. January 9th, John is going to go back to jail. Because remember, what they put to the judge was he's the breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to work to support his family. Well, then the judge comes back now and says, or the prosecutors, I don't know how this worked out or who thought of this. They say, you've been fired. You're no longer the breadwinner, so back to jail.
Yeah, probably right. The DA, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then they raise the bond to $500,000.
Too late.
Now, this is after they've gotten the FBI involved and they're quick to get some help with this.
Yeah.
They don't try to just do this on their own.
Probably as fast as they could make. Mm-hmm. It was probably as fast as they could right this wrong.
Well,
that they quickly came to realize was a wrong.
I get that it, in hindsight, is a wrong. But at the time, I don't know what else they could have done.
Okay.
Because you can't add facts to the situation that aren't there yet. I mean, you have suspicion all day long. But if you mess up in that aspect, then you give them, you know, a pathway to invalidate all your research.
Okay.
And I don't know what all the search warrants said. They're very specific.
Yes, they're supposed to be.
So, and in 1985, I don't know how that worked. So the safe, maybe they just didn't find it because it was hidden. Or maybe it was in somewhere that they weren't authorized to go.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it happened and we got to move on from it.
Yeah.
And I believe there was a lot of good evidence there to get some closure for some victims who were, we will never know if they were one of his victims or not. Mm-hmm. But I am 99.9% sure that Patty Walensky was a victim of his.
Oh, yeah.
Sure sounds like.
Yeah. Her family is 100% sure that she's a victim of his. So the trial is going to begin in June of 1986.
And now this is the trial just for
the sexual assault.
Sexual charges.
Yes. Okay. Now, again, I'm going to bring in Robert Ressler, the Mindhunter guy. Now, he's going to testify at John's sentencing that he had no doubt Crutchley was like the many serial killers he had interviewed and would continue his work upon release. He believed that he intended to murder Laura and had done it many times before. John pleads guilty to 3 of the 11 charges. So the judge is going to give him the maximum amount of time that he can give him for what he has been accused. 25 years is what he gets.
Okay.
That's the maximum. It's excessive at the time for what he's pleading guilty to. But the judge is, he's got all this other information. You got a seasoned FBI agent. Mm-hmm.
Telling you, don't let this guy out.
Invented
the
term serial killer and has interviewed so many and is saying he's just like all the ones that I've. So the judge is listening to that.
Right.
And gives him 25 years and after that, 50 years probation.
Okay. So he's like, we're going
to
keep an eye on
him. He's trying to do the best that he can with this. Now, Karen, his wife at the time and eventually becomes his ex-wife, she's still going to defend him a little bit. And in, she tells a newspaper, quote, I can't see why it, the punishment, exceeded the guidelines. Karen goes on to say, it was a gentle rape. Can you imagine?
No, I cannot.
Now, Karen does eventually divorce him, so and she got smarter and left John and took that 4-year-old boy and gone.
I guess she didn't care that Polly was only lightly killed.
Patty.
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 Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. She didn't have anything to say about Patty, but Can you imagine being Laura and hearing that? Mm-mm, and then
no.
Laura's family and reading that in the paper. Mm. And also I'm going to say, okay, she's quoted in the paper. This is not a recorded interview that Karen is saying could have been
misunderstood, misconstrued.
Could have been a lie. Maybe yeah. Karen didn't say that. Yeah. I don't know. But that's what was quoted in the... And that is a very 1985 thing, 86 thing to yeah. say. I mean, it is.
Sadly.
It's just different. Yeah. Okay. So while John is in jail, the authorities know that the clock is ticking and they are trying to gather evidence on him, trying to convict him of a murder.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was given 25 years, but we all know.
Yeah, what's that? Gets him, he's up for probation maybe, in, or parole in 7 years maybe, something.
Close.
Yeah.
You're close. All right. Between January 1985 and December of 1985, six unidentified female murder victims were found within a 6-mile radius of his home.
Mm-mm.
Authorities believe that his victim count could be as high as 32 from Virginia to Florida. But they cannot find any evidence to convict him of these murders.
Yeah.
Because it left the safe and yeah. went away.
Yeah.
I believe.
And this is, and it's got to be some sort of physical evidence because we've talked about this plenty of times. DNA evidence first used in a murder case, I think, in England in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
So it was and very much in its infancy at the time.
Right.
So they right. were looking for physical
and
evidence.
It would also seem that he would just drink the DNA evidence.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess these bodies have been there too long to, like, see that they're depleted of blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that
yeah.
would have been another, like, tie. Like, oh, these all have mm-hmm. been drained.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I didn't coin the phrase Count Malabar. A local newspaper did that. That was one of their headlines. So, but I thought that was catchy, so I used it as the title.
Leave here. It to the media to come up with a catchy name for a serial killer.
They do. All right. John Crutchley does 10 years of his 25-year sentence. And the residents of Florida are furious.
Yeah.
And now this guy is about to get out of jail. Where does he go? Turns out, no one wants him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Two smaller communities flat out say, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You are not putting him in our community. Nope.
But he's got to live in Florida because he's on probation.
So,
I'm guessing.
Yeah.
What they do is they pretty much force him on Orlando. Now, the police chief even wrote a note to the governor, furious, saying he found out that he was getting this man in his community by reading the paper. He was furious.
Mm.
Didn't matter. He's going to be dropped on Orlando.
So is he in a halfway house?
That is my next sentence.
Sorry.
He was released. Perfect. Perfect lead in. Mm-hmm. He was released to a halfway house in this area.
So that's why someone is dictating where he's going to be going, because he's not just...
No, he's got 50 years
free and clear. Yeah.
Probation.
Right.
All right. He gets to the halfway house. That very night, he's going to smoke some weed with some residents there. Yeah, he likes marijuana.
That's going to violate. One of his things.
Yeah, he's already violating
his parole. Now, hold on. The next morning, parole officer shows up.
Aha!
I need you to pee in a cup for me.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Back to jail. Life. Violated your parole.
Good.
He was out almost the same time Laura was in his home.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. November 30th, 2002. John is found dead in his cell by his cellmate.
Ooh.
His boxer shorts were partially on. He had a plastic bag over his head held by a rubber band. There was an asthma inhaler found in the bag. The medical examiner ruled his death accidental due to autoerotic asphyxiation.
So the story does have a happy ending.
I guess so. Now, his cellmate told... Oh, go ahead, Katie.
You're saying his cellmate found him, not that his cellmate killed him.
Correct.
Okay, that's where I was...
Yeah, the cellmate had to write all this down and submit it. And so here's what the cellmate says. He told the authorities that John was always looking for more and more kinky ways to masturbate, using needles inserted into his genitals.
Oh, so it really was a happy ending.
Using string with nooses, electrical wires, choking himself. In the end, it was John's kinky tendencies that he told the authorities about that did him in.
His poor cellmate. I don't know what he did to earn him to be in this place. Maybe he's just as terrible. But him having to like listen to this
and deal with this guy. Yeah. This like, ultimate
I think I would just punch a guard in the face and get sent to solitary.
Can you imagine that's your cellmate? Like, first of all, you're in jail.
Maybe he's just as bad.
Let's hope the cellmate actually committed the crime he was there for. Right. So yeah. let's hope that he was in jail. But then this is the guy you get as your cellmate.
Like, that's the ultimate punishment.
I mean, gosh. And he says he first thought he was asleep, and so he's tapping him and saying, you know, time to get up. And then he sees the bag on his head and he rips the bag off.
Okay.
And so then that's...
And realizes he is deceased.
He is deceased. Mm-hmm. And so he was going for the ultimate dangerous pleasure-seeking moment, I guess.
I'm going to keep saying happy ending until you guys get it.
And this was the ultimate... But that's how you get rid of a vampire. So
add that to the lore: wooden stake,
yeah, garlic,
and
autoerotic asphyxiation. There you go. And that is the story of Count Malabar. I will put the references. I'll give it to Katie to put in the show notes.
So if you were thinking about dressing up as a vampire for Halloween this year, maybe have second thoughts about that.
Definitely so.
Especially after listening to this story. All right, guys, thanks. That was terrific. Kelly, you climbed down out of the big chair. Katie will thrill us with something new and different next time. In the meantime, say something nice about us on your podcast platform of choice. Give us a shout out on Facebook or Apple iTunes. Leave us 5 stars or keep it to yourself.
There you go.
Anything else, guys?
Nope.
Is that it? Good night, everybody.